chapter. But because of time, we were going to have to look at this in a somewhat of a general way. But before I do that, I just want to let everyone know. So, Brother Mike, Brother Keith, and I have been having some discussions about some different thoughts and plannings going forward. And I know we've had some discussions with some of you about where we go next. So we should finish the Book of Judges next week. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go through the Book of Ruth. Ruth is in between Judges, 1 Samuel, and Ruth is four chapters. And so I'm going to take us through the Book of Ruth for, again, 4 weeks, and then maybe 1 week to summarize. So at the most, 5 weeks. And then Brother Mike's going to begin to take us through 1 Samuel. So, and if you think about it, it kind of fits. We've been in Joshua. We were in Joshua for a year and a half, and then we've spent a good year in Judges besides doing the one another's and going through the book, the God who is there. So that's where we're going to move. We're going to move forward, and it'll give us a better perspective of this block of history and of the accounts. So it'll be Ruth, and then we will go through 1 Samuel. Okay, so with that, let's read the text in Judges chapter 20. And then we'll just have some time for some comments. Then all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba, as well as from the land of Gilead, and the congregation gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah. The leaders of all the people and all the tribes presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. Then the children of Israel said, "Tell us how this wicked deed happened." And if you remember, and again, good morning. If you remember, last week, Brother Mike led us through this horrific account of the concubine being raped and then the actions that the Levite took, the master took to rouse, if you will, or arouse the children of Israel. So that's what he's talking about. Verse 3, tell us how this wicked deed happened. Hi, we're in Judges chapter 20, if you want to join us. Yes, ma'am. So, verse 4, so the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, "My concubine and I went to Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. And the men of Gibeah rose against me, and they surrounded the house at night because of me, and they intended to kill me. But instead, they ravished my concubine so that she died. So I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel, because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. Look, all of your children, all you children of Israel, give your advice and counsel here and now." Then all the people arose as one man, saying, "None of us will go to his tent, nor will any of us turn back to his house. Now, this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 out of every 1,000, and 1,000 out of every 10,000, to make provisions for the people that when they come to Gibeah in Benjamin, they may repay all the vileness that they have done in Israel." So all the men of Israel gathered against the city, united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribes of Benjamin, saying, "What is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now, therefore, deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove this evil from Israel." But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. And from their cities, as that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who numbered 700 select men. And among all these people, there were 700 select men who were left-handed. Every one could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. Now, besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword, and all of these were men of war. The children of Israel arose and went to the house of God to ask counsel of God. And they said, "Which one of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Judah shall go up first." So the children of Israel rose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. And the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah, and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites. And the people, that is, the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day. Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, "Shall I again draw near for battle against the children of my brother Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Go up against them." So the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day. Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day and cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel. All these drew the sword. Then all the children of Israel, that is all the people, went up and came to the house of God and wept. And they sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening, and they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. So the children of Israel inquired of the Lord. The Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, "Shall I again go out to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease?" And the Lord said, "Go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand." Then Israel sent men in ambush all around Gibeah, and the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day, put themselves in battle array against Gibeah as at the other times. So the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city, and they began to strike down and kill some of the people, as at other times in the highways, one of which goes to Bethel and the other to Gibeah, and in the field about 30 men of Israel. And the children of Benjamin said, "They are struck down before us as first," but the children of Israel said, "Let us flee and draw them away from the city to the highways." So all the men of Israel rose from their place and put themselves in battle array at Baal Tamar. Then Israel's men in ambush burst forth from their position in the plain of Geba. And 10,000 select men from all Israel came up against Gibeah, and the battle was fierce. But the Benjamins did not know that disaster was upon them. And the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel, and the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjaminites, all these who drew the sword. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were defeated. Then the men of Israel had given ground to the Benjamites because they relied on the men in ambush who they had set against Gibeah. And the men in ambush quickly rushed upon Gibeah. The men in ambush spread out and struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. Now the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in ambush was that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city, whereupon the men of Israel would turn in battle. Now Benjamin had begun to strike and kill about 30 of the men of Israel, for they said, "Surely they are defeated before us, as in the first battle." But when the cloud began to rise from the city in a column of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and there was the whole city going up in smoke to heaven. When the men of Israel turned back, the men of Benjamin panicked, for they saw that disaster had come upon them. Therefore, they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness, but the battle overtook them, and whoever had come up out of the cities, they destroyed in their midst. They surrounded the Benjaminites and chased them and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah towards the east, and 18,000 men of Benjamin fell, and all these were men of valor. Then they turned and fled toward the wilderness of the rock of Rimmon, and they cut down 5,000 of them on the highways. Then they pursued them relentlessly up to Gidom and killed 2,000 of them. So all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword, and all these were men of valor. But 600 men turned and fled towards the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon, and they stayed at the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. The men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword from every city, men and beasts, and all who were found. They also set fire to all the cities they came to. So that is the narrative that God has given to us. And I one of the things I want us to think about is this. Not what I want. This is the amount of people that are gathered together from all the tribes of Israel. This is the amount of people that are gathered together from the tribes of Benjamin. Now, just as a show of hands or whatever, how many of us would be prepared with this to go against that? How many of us would think, ruh-roh? I certainly would. It wouldn't matter to me how valiant these members, they were valiant. And I just want us to think about this as we go through this, because this is, a lot goes on in this chapter, as a lot's going on among all the tribes. But again, there's a war that's about to be waged. And again, I would submit that, I'll put it this way, I have no idea what Benjamin's thinking. Because again, they got 26, almost 27,000 men, and they're going against all the tribes of Israel, which are 400,000. So as we walk through this, just keep that in mind, and maybe that'll give us some perspective. So we get to this war that's waged against Israel, and it's waged against their brethren. And that's another thought we need to consider, because certainly Benjamin is one of the tribes, and that's the way the narrative starts, right? And it even includes those that are on the other side of the Jordan. Remember how the Jordan, some of the tribes settled on the other side of the Jordan, Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh. And so the word has gone out, right? Remember, the concubine's pieces have been sent to all of Israel. And that's rather bizarre, isn't it, to cut up a woman's body and send pieces of it throughout all of Israel. And you would think it got everyone's attention, right? And so that's how the narrative starts. And as we think about it, and it says that they, all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba, as well as from the land of Gilead. And that's, again, where we get those on the other side of the Jordan, and the congregation gathered together as one before the Lord in Mitzpah. Mitzpah was a place where many of these important meetings would take place. So the word goes out, the pieces are sent, and all Israel gathers together, and they meet at Mitzpah, and they're about to talk about war. And so we find ourselves right now in the opening, in preliminaries, and then as we go through it, we'll see how it works out. So they all gathered together, and all the leaders of the people, the tribes of Israel, presented themselves at the assembly of the people of God. There it is, 400,000 soldiers who drew the sword. And then verse 3 is interesting. Now, the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had come up to Mitzpah, and Benjamin doesn't come up. And that's something to think about. Why doesn't Benjamin come up to the meeting? Well, certainly the men are from Gilead, right? That's the town of Benjamin. But nevertheless, it's something to think about where, for whatever reason, and maybe we could talk about it a little bit as we go through this, Benjamin decides it's better to fight the 400 than to turn over the men who did it. Yes, Lance?
Did Benjamin get a piece of the
concubine
as well?
He sent all the pieces out to all the tribes.
What?
Not only that, but if you think about it, if the word has gone out through all of Israel, do you not think Benjamin knew it? Certainly did. They were aware of what was going to take place. As a matter of fact, we'll see that even a little further on how... it was more their choice not to join in putting to death these vile men, and that their resistance will ultimately almost lead to what? Their extinction. But for the mercy of God, as we get to the end, we'll see that those 600 men, and then as Brother Mike comes back next week for the last chapter, how those 600 men are those that will continually raise up the seed of the tribe of Benjamin. Otherwise, Benjamin would have been totally wiped out. Here's another thought, and just something to think about. When the children of Israel came into the land of promise, if you remember, it talks about how many men were in the army. And originally, there was like 603,000 soldiers when they first entered the land of promise, because they counted them all, right? So somewhere along the line, and you think about it as we go through the book of Judges and how we went through the book of Joshua, this is really... let's just say there's a 200,000 man loss. So Israel has suffered. They're not what they were when they first came into the promised land. and they're being whittled down because of the wars. And certainly we understand that, because remember what God said, they were to drive out the inhabitants, the other nations before them. And so certainly there was loss. So just something to think about. So the children of Benjamin had gone up to, I mean, the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. And so again, Lance, I think that kind of tells us they knew about it. They knew what was going on. And tell us how this wicked deed happened. So I know Brother Mike touched on this last week, but I want to look at verse 4 a little for a moment. The Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, "My concubine and I went to Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night." True or false? Anybody remember the narrative from last week? True, right? That's what they did. Okay. "And the men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. And they intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died." True or false?
It's an omission of truth. There's a lot of truth there. He just left out all the details.
Well, I think Brother Mike used the word redacted.
Yeah, it
was a redacted statement. I'm going to go a little bit further and say it was a lie. Because half a truth is what?
A whole lie.
A whole lie. So you think about this now. Remember what happened previous to this when we were talking about the priest that had gone up to be with Micah. He was a what? Levite. And now here we have again another Levite. Remember what the Levite's job was? To do what? Teach the people. Give them God's law. So he's really trying to be slick with words, isn't he? Because the reality is, and if you think about it, I know you talked about it last week, what would you and I have done if people were knocking at the door and said, send the man out? How many of us would say, no, just because you remember the owner of the home was going to do what? He was going to send his daughter and the concubine out. And ultimately, this man, this Levite, he decides, no, just take my concubine. Which one of us would do that as men? And then to lie about it, and his lie arouses all these tribes. So he's not of the worthy character that I think we should assign to him. So again, he decides to make them think that he's the victim. And really, in one sense, he's what? He's the criminal. He's the one that pushed his wife out, he pushed her out the door. I would have gone down swinging, wouldn't you? I mean, you might get to her, but you're going to go through me and God be with me. And again, there's something is really off in this whole scenario. Nevertheless, it has its effect. And that's something, if you think about, Benjamin refuses to come down. And I just want to ask you, what do you think is the reason behind Benjamin? Again, they realize this to some extent. I mean, they realize all of Israel is much bigger than them. What would be a reason for them not to put these vile men to death? Thoughts?
Well, the whole book of Judges keeps telling us that everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes, so they saw nothing really wrong in the sense of their own people. At that time, from what I was reading this week, you know, we talk about even the verse 4, you know, the Levite, it first starts off as the husband of the woman, but he answered my concubine. That was even a sin against God, because he was only supposed to have a wife, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, this Levite's got lots of issues, right?
Yes. It's just amazing that as we read this, you know, I was kind of thinking back too from being in Genesis, the sons of Israel, even before and after the law, you see just as much sin and perversion within the family and tribes with the old alcohol. And I think it was, to me, also saw that, you know, maybe come to really light that the law is not there to save us, but it is supposed to be there to guide us and correct us of our sins, and even here it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many issues that ran through the book of Judges, and remember when this is taking place, right? This is not post-Samson. This is pre-Samson. And of course, even the fact of what it says in verse 28, where it talks about Phinehas and him being the son of Eleazar and him being the relation to Aaron, that this is taking place early on in the book of Judges, right? And so we have to think about that, and that constant thought that came up through the final chapters of Judges was what? No king in Israel? And everyone did what was right in their own eyes, right? I want to suggest a couple of things. I want to suggest one of the reasons why Benjamin doesn't go up is because of pride. That's just one thought that I had. That they see themselves as... they're not going to give in. They're going to hold their ground, and they're going to say, we don't care. That's what you were saying. We don't care what happened. We're going to be our own, and we're not going to take part in this. Or here's another thought. Maybe the men in Gibeah who did that horrible thing, maybe they were important people. Maybe they were officials. Maybe they were prominent. Maybe Benjamin's thinking, hey, we can't allow this. The word doesn't really tell us specifically why they don't come. I would say they were wrong for whatever way they were thinking, but there probably are some reasons that they thought of that kept them from going up. Because again, not only was the act heinous, but the deck is stacked against them. So there's got to be something that's holding them from delivering these vile men to be punished for what is what? An evil act, right? It wasn't like there's no argument over, well, did they do what's right or did they do what's wrong? They did something terrible, even to the point of it saying nothing like this has ever been done, and that certainly includes the sending out of the parts of the concubine. So let's keep going through. So the men of Gibeah rose up against me in verse 5, and they surrounded the house at night, and they tended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine. I took my concubine, I cut her in pieces, I sent it throughout all of Israel, and now he says to them, verse 7, look, all you children of Israel, give your advice and counsel here and now. And then in verse 8, all the people arose as one man saying, we will not go to his, no man will go to his tent, nor will any of us turn back from his house. Now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah, we will go up against it by lot. And they actually make provision. So in a sense, they make a vow. So none of us are going to return home until we take care of business here. And not only that, they lay plans. And that's what it says, where it talks about in verse 10, it says, we will take men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes, and 100 out of every 1,000, 1,000 out of every 10,000, to what? To make provisions for the people that when they come to Gibeon and Benjamin, they may repay them for all the vileness that they have done in Israel. So basically, they set up supply lines. Think about it. This is a war campaign. And so the children of Israel put it together in their minds, and they begin to make their provisions. They got things set up. And again, they realize that they have the advantage, or they think they have the advantage, right? Because of not only the numbers, but because they are united as one man. And I thought about that, and I thought about, isn't it true how sometimes good things unite people, and sometimes bad things unite people, right? This is a terrible act. And yet it does unite them, and up to this point, if you remember the book of Judges, they were scattered all over the place, weren't they? There was a judge up here, there was this issue, and went on. All of a sudden, this terrible act has united them as one, with the exception of Benjamin and the exception of the men at Jabesh-Gilead, which we'll see. So, something to think about. We ought to be united when we need to be united as believers. Well, we ought to consider what we do. And so, again, they make a vow and they say, well, that's it. We won't rest until this happens. So verse 11, all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, united together as one man. And the tribes of Israel sent through the tribe of Benjamin saying, what is this wickedness in verse 12 that has occurred? Now, therefore, deliver up those men, the perverted men who are on Gibeah, that we put them to death. But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to go to battle against the children of Israel. Again, I really don't fully comprehend this as far as what they're thinking, other than perhaps they have some reason for them to resist to the point of saying, no, we're not going to do this. And basically, if we have to, we'll take you on. Again, it must have been a pretty deep conviction, you would think. Whether it's the right conviction or not, that's not what I'm saying. It must have been something very, very strong in their minds to say, no, we're not going to deliver this, these men up to you. And this, we're not going to give them over to you so you could punish them. So, and really from verse 12 through verse 17, they lay their plans, right? Verse 13, now therefore deliver up the men. And then 14, instead the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to go to battle. From their cities, from that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who were 700 select men. And that's where I came up with the number 26,700, which is an interesting thought as we get to... we can get to it at the end, because when you begin to read the narrative of how many of them died, you're going to find something. There's 1,100 missing, because you'll see that they kill X amount, and they kill X amount, and they kill X amount, and then 600 men escape, and it really comes out to 25,600, and there's 1,100 men missing. And I just think that it's been excluded, because I do think that these 1,100 could certainly have been killed in some of these skirmishes and battles that's not mentioned. And for the reason that God gives us, because sometimes you think about it, God gives us absolute specifics where you can match it up perfectly, right? But God sometimes leaves us in a little bit of a thought to try to figure out. So anyway, they devised their plans, and they got 700 select men and 700 select men who were left-handed. I'm all for left-handers, by the way. Anybody else here for left-handers? I would think you would be, babe. So we're both left-handed. We got four right-handed kids and one left-handed grandchild, and the great-grandkids, I'm not sure what the heck they are yet. But it does mention the left-handed, and you know what they say, just before, left-handed people are in their right mind, so you know. So, verse 17, so besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All these were men of war, and the children of Israel rose and went up to the house of God. And this is where I wanted to spend a few minutes, because I want to ask you a question. The first time they go out, they suffer a big loss, right? And it talks about how many they lost, 22,000. Again, you got 400 against 26 and change. They go out in the first battle, and lo and behold, 22,000 of them are killed. Then they go out the next day, and these soldiers kill another 18,000 of them. So before we get to the third day of battle, they've already lost 40,000. Now, it could be where some of these 1,100 got lost, but again, God doesn't tell us specifically. What I want to ask us to think about is, as it starts to unfold, as the battle begins to display itself, I want you to think about what it says in verse 18. The children of Israel arose, went up to the house of God to ask counsel of God. Now I'm going to say what I think, and then you can think for yourself or through it yourself. I don't think that they asked God the right thing here. Because look what they say. They asked counsel of God, and they said, which one of us shall go up first to battle the children of Benjamin? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up first. But as I looked at this and as I consider this, that wasn't the question they should have asked. Not who should go first. Should we go, actually? And if you get to that, if you think about that, it kind of helps in the understanding. Again, on the first day of battle, they go out, and God lets the children of Benjamin kill 22,000 of them. So instead of them asking God if they should, because remember, they made a vow, right? This is what we're going to do. We'll take care of this. Did they ask counsel of God, or did they just ask God, who goes first? And I wanted you to think about that and consider it even after we get through this chapter, that we need to be very, I think we need to be very careful about our prayer life and what we ask God for, and that we don't ask God for what we want, we ask God for what he wants. Because again, God answers them. He tells them Judah goes up first. Well, Judah was always the one that was supposed to go up first, right? Remember after Joshua died and the elders died? Who took the lead? Judah. So as they approach God and they ask God, he says, Judah goes up first. So the children of Israel, verse 19, they rose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah, and the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin, and the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. And then the children of Benjamin came out on that day, cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites. Now, verse 22 is also, 22 and 23 is also interesting. And the people, that is, the men of Israel, encouraged themselves and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day. So they suffered a defeat. They go back to their camp. And they just decide, okay, we'll just do this again. Let's go back again. Although it does say the children of Israel went up, and look at verse 23, it's interesting. They wept before the Lord until evening and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, shall I draw near for battle again against the children of my brother Benjamin? And the Lord said, go up against them. I still see in this, they never really asked God if they should. They're inquiring now. And remember, they lost 22,000. That's a shocker to me. And I would be a bit tentative about day two. And so they approach God, but did they really ask God's counsel? Or, in my understanding, they just say, should we try this again? Not asking them whether they should or not. And God says to them, yeah, go up against them. So the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day. Verse 25, and Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day and cut down 18,000 more of the children of Israel, all these who drew the sword. Now, when we get to verses 26, 27, and 28, I think we're getting down to the reality here. Because look what it says. All the children of Israel, that is all the people, went up and came to the house of God and wept. And they sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. So the children of Israel inquired of the Lord. The Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before them in those days, saying, shall I go up to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? And to me, this is where I think they are really seeking God's direction. And they're seeking God's direction in a way that befits approaching God. They offer sacrifices. They come to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, who was the high priest. And I think in part, one of the reasons why they suffered so much defeat is I think there was too much of them in the battle. And I thought about this, how many times in our life do we suffer defeat because there's too much of us in the way, right? There's too little of God, too much of us. And many times we are defeated, not because God is not concerned about us, because certainly he loves us, he numbers the hairs of our head, but because God first has to get us to realize that it's not us in the battle, it's him in the battle, right? And again, the lessons in the Old Testament, we need to be careful that we don't try to take them and jam them into the New Testament and make everything line up perfectly. Because I think if you try that, you'll fail. We need to understand the Old Testament in its historical sense and use the principles from the Word of God to help us to interpret, but be careful not to, again, try to make, if you will, everything fit into Paul's epistles and Paul's principles. So I believe at this point, they are whittled down to the point where they realize we just can't do this. No matter how big we are, no matter how small they are, we're not gonna be able to accomplish this without God's blessing. And again, I bet all of us could remember days in trials and tribulations where we felt defeated. We felt like God almost had let us go, but it wasn't until we finally were out of the way and trusted the Lord. And so look how it turns out in verse 29. We only got a few minutes left. Again, it's a big chapter, so I know I've jumped around. So verse 29, they sent an ambush against Gibeah, and the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day, put themselves in battle array against Gibeah as the other times. The children of Benjamin went up against them and were drawn from the city, and they began to strike down and kill some of the people as other times in the highways and all that. And they killed 30 men. So now maybe it's Benjamin now. Now Benjamin says, hey, you know what? We crushed them the first 2 days. We'll just do it again. Again, lots to think about as you work through this war campaign. So they think that they are going to, there's that verse in Isaiah where people who are not truly following God's law, word, where it says that they think tomorrow will be as today, tomorrow will be as today and much more, right? There's this attitude. Now, what would you think? If you these guys, that's a northern term, by the way, these guys, they take 22, they got 40,000. What do you think they thought about when I got up on the third day? So I'm coming. No problem.
Bring it on.
Yeah. We took care of you the first 2 days. We'll take care of this. And it's interesting how it says that in verse 34. It says that, well, in verse 33, the men of Israel, now they set an ambush. Were they really being led by the counsel of God at this point? Something to think about. And it says in verse 34, 10,000 select men from all Israel came up. Look at the end of verse 34. The Benjamins did not know that disaster was upon them. They think this is going to be just another day of crushing the children of Israel, and it begins to turn. So the Lord defeated Benjamin, verse 25, and Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjaminites, all who drew the sword. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were defeated, and the men of Israel, and then it goes on and talks about how they kind of set this ambush up, and they drew them out of the city, and then they sent up the cloud of smoke, and now basically they got them surrounded. And that's pretty much where their demise begins to come quickly. And so the men of ambush in verse 37, they rush upon Gibeah, they spread out, and they struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. And again, they signal, and all these things are starting to happen. And if you read through the following verses, I think what it does is it tells us what happened. Then it gives us basically a recount of what happened. Because if you don't think of it that way. You look at this, it'll say 22,000, 18,000, and then another 22,000, another 18,000, and another 5,000. But if you add all that up, that's more than they had from the beginning. So I think what it's doing is it's telling us what happened, and it kind of gives us a little bit more detail. And so you come down, and now the children of Israel have their enemy in sight. In verse 41, the children of Israel turned back, and the men of Benjamin panicked. And there it is again. They saw the disaster come upon them, and therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel. But the battle overtook them, and whoever came out of the cities, they destroyed in their midst, and they surrounded them. In verse 44, and 18,000 men of Benjamin fell, and all these were men of valor, probably some of the left-handed guys too. Then they turned and fled towards the wilderness of the rock of Rimmon, and they cut down 5,000. And so again, if you add all this up, as I said to you, it winds up being this 1,100 that are missing. And so that's just for us to keep in mind. So at the end, verse 46, all who fell at Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword. 600 of them turned and fled towards the wilderness, towards the rock of Rimmon, and they stayed there for 4 months. The children of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin, struck them down with the edge of the sword, and every city, men and beasts, and all that were found, and they set fire to all the cities they came to. So, a lot of things have taken place. Now, when we come to the final chapter, we'll find out how God, and I say this with great emphasis, God in his mercy will allow the tribe of Benjamin to survive. And we'll see how these, because they made their vows, so now the men from the other tribes can't marry the women from the tribes of Benjamin until they find these 600 men who lived in Jabesh-Gilead, who never came to the battle besides Benjamin, and God provides wives for them. And then there's this story of, and that's a pretty wild story when we get to next week, and I don't want to step on Brother Mike's feet. They basically sent 600 men to go and chase 600 women and grab a wife. But there was a show.
Seven brides,
yeah, absolutely. And that's got to be a pretty wild scene, right? And I don't know about you, but I'd be in the front of the line. I'd be looking for my blonde. I would. But God's going to spare them, and it's a wild scene, isn't it? If you read the book of Judges, and it's going to settle down in Ruth, and then it's going to settle down further in 1 Samuel. But these were terrible times, brothers and sisters. So, again, I don't have time for comments unless you want to just grab me on your own. Let's just close it with a word of prayer and continue our worship. Our Father and God, thank you for your truth. Thank you for who you are, the great Father of lights, the one with whom there is no shadow or variableness. Lord, you never change. You are the great one who is without bounds, that you are boundless, Lord. You're eternal. Thank you for this day. May we worship you in spirit and truth. May the songs that we sing and the prayers that we pray and the thoughts that we think be pleasing. May you come upon us and come amongst us, and may we worship you in spirit and truth. In Jesus' name, amen.